Imagine you are staring at like this massive, just completely tangled knot of hundreds of different cables.
Oh, the absolute worst.
Right. And you pull on one wire, hoping to loosen things up a bit, and somehow three other knots get even tighter.
Yeah, that is exactly how it feels looking at the news these days.
It really is. When we face these overlapping, terrifying crises, whether it's, global supply chain failures or climate disasters or even just a localized economic crash, our instinct is almost always to look for a hero.
Right, a savior.
Exactly. We want this singular visionary with a sword to just step in, cut the Gordian knot, and drag everyone out to safety.
Which, I mean, that is a deeply human reflex. When a system becomes completely illegible to us, we just sort of outsource our critical thinking to whoever projects the most
We
confidence.
just assume there has to be some exceptional individual out there who has the master blueprint.
Right, but there usually isn't.
And relying on that one person with a sword is increasingly looking like a recipe for total disaster. So, what if the only way out of a complex maze isn't force, but a thread? Like a collective map that everyone in the maze holds onto together, building it in real time.
I love that visual.
Welcome, everyone, to another deep dive. If you are a learner constantly trying to, make sense of an incredibly complicated world, you are absolutely in the right place today.
We have a really fascinating one today.
We really do. We are exploring a 2026 text called The Thread Within the Deliberative Democracy Labyrinth by Alexander N. Christakis and Maria Z. Kakoulaki. And our mission today is to figure out how we can untangle the massive overlapping crises of our modern world without feeling hopelessly overwhelmed.
And we are going to do it by exploring a 50-year-old science of dialogue, which is just so cool.
It is. The core argument here revolves around this concept called demosophia. So in ancient Greek, democracy translated roughly to the power of the people. But demosophia shifts that paradigm entirely. It translates to the wisdom of the people.
Yes. It proposes that the solution to our most entrenched problems isn't consolidating power at the top, but systematically extracting and structuring the latent wisdom of the very people who are actually experiencing the crisis.
Usually, when we talk about solving global issues, the conversation immediately pivots to needing smarter leaders.
Yeah.
Or maybe, I don't know, turning everything over to highly advanced AI systems.
Yeah, the tech savior complex.
Exactly. We rarely hear the argument that we just need each other, provided, of course, that we communicate under a very strict set of architectural rules.
And it is worth noting up front for you listening, this isn't some like pie in the sky utopian
Oh,
philosophy.
no, not at all.
We are going to look at how this specific methodology has been utilized by everyone from indigenous tribal leaders navigating historical trauma all the way to pharmaceutical executives trying to kill unviable drugs.
To really understand why this structure is necessary, we kind of have to look at the sheer scale of modern crises. The text uses a term coined, I think, in a 1970 prospectus for the Club of Rome.
Right, the global problematique.
The global problematique. A problematique is what happens when problems stop being isolated, right? Climate change, poverty, global pandemics, localized wars, these are deeply tangled meta problems.
Yeah, a housing crisis in one city bleeds into public health,
Right.
which then strains the education system, which then impacts the local economy. It's all connected.
Trying to solve these issues independently is like trying to fix a leaky pipe in your bathroom while the house is actively on fire and the foundation is simultaneously sinking into the earth.
That is a stressful metaphor, but incredibly accurate. You might fix the pipe, but you are completely ignoring the larger reality that is literally destroying the system.
And researchers have spent decades trying to map this tangle. There was this really extensive inquiry conducted in 1993 to find the absolute center of gravity for this global mess.
Right, they mapped out these continuous critical problems, or CCPs.
Yeah, dozens of them, from environmental pollution to explosive population growth. And they traced the lines of influence between them. And the deepest root cause they found, the issue driving almost everything else, was identified as the growing irrelevance of traditional values and the continuing failure of humanity to evolve new ones.
That was CCP18, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, failure to evolve new values. Man, that is a heavy realization.
It really is.
But it also makes me a little skeptical of the proposed solution, to be honest. If these meta problems are truly this massive, and they stem from something as deep as our collective values, my first instinct is to find someone with a massive supercomputer and a PhD in complex systems.
Sure, bring in the heavy hitters.
Right. Why on earth would we ask average people, the very people struggling with these failing values, to figure out the foundation of a burning house?
I mean, outsourcing the problem to a detached elite seems logical on the surface, But the book argues it consistently creates a kind of societal paralysis.
How so?
Well, to illustrate this paralysis, the text brings in this 1904 poem by C.P. Cabify called Waiting for the Barbarians. Have you read it?
I have, yeah. It's brilliant.
It describes a society where the senators, the emperors, the consuls, they're all just sitting around in the public square doing absolutely nothing. No laws are being debated. No speeches are being given.
Just waiting.
Exactly. Why? Because the barbarians are arriving today. The entire society has halted its own self-governance because they believe this outside force is going to come in and dictate the new reality.
And the tragic punchline of the poem is that night falls and word comes from the borders that the barbarians aren't coming.
Right.
In fact, they might not even exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the society is left in a state of total existential dread, asking what will become of them without any barbarians, because those people were supposed to be the solution.
It captures the modern condition perfectly, doesn't it?
It really does.
When a society waits for the modern day barbarians, you know, the specialized experts, the tech billionaires, the political saviors to fly in and solve a problematique, the society just stagnates.
Because the experts cannot hold all the answers.
Exactly. Their analyses are fundamentally siloed. An economist sees the world entirely through the lens of market.
Right, and an epidemiologist sees it through the lens of viral transmission.
Yeah, they only possess one specific piece of the puzzle.
So if traditional experts working in their silos are failing to fix these tangled messes, the issue isn't just a lack of data. It suggests that the very tools they are using, the actual scientific method being applied, is the wrong fit for the job.
That is the pivotal realization here. The argument is that we are trying to solve human meta-problems using the wrong phase of science.
Wrong phase. Let's break that down.
Okay, so we can break this down into three distinct phases to see where the mismatch happens. First phase, science is objective and observer-independent. This is physics or chemistry. Newton's law of gravitation works whether you believe in it or not. An apple falling from a tree in ancient Athens falls at exactly the same rate as an apple falling in modern New York.
So the truth is entirely independent of human perception. Gravity doesn't care about my feelings.
Exactly. Gravity does not care. Now, second phase science moves into the subjective, observer-dependent realm.
Like what? Psychology?
Yeah, psychology, sociology, clinical medicine. A classic example the book uses is the white coat effect.
Oh, where a patient's blood pressure spikes. Well, simply because a doctor walks into the examination room.
Yes, the mere presence of the observer actively alters the reality being measured.
But neither of those phases can handle a global crisis on their own, right?
No, because they don't account for collective action. And that brings us to third phase science, which is intersubjective or observer interdependent.
Intersubjective.
Yeah. This phase doesn't just measure a problem. It fully integrates the actions required to improve a highly complex situation. And because any action taken in a society impacts different groups in conflicting ways, this science requires building consensus among a highly diverse group of stakeholders.
Okay, wait, I need to clarify something here, because this can sound like a slightly dangerous pivot.
How so?
When we say intersubjective science requires consensus, does that mean objective facts don't matter anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Because if we just throw out the data and let everyone invent their own reality based on what they agree upon, that sounds like a recipe for total chaos.
Oh, absolutely. No, objective facts remain the foundation. They are non-negotiable.
Okay, good.
Take the COVID-19 pandemic, the biology of the virus, its transmission rate, the genetic sequencing. That relies heavily on first phase science. It is objective, hard data.
Right.
But solving the societal impact of that pandemic requires something else entirely.
Because the virus is just the biological trigger, but the crisis is everything that happens next.
Precisely. Deciding when to implement lockdowns, managing the catastrophic economic fallout, figuring out remote schooling, addressing the psychological toll of isolation, that is a third phase problem.
That makes a lot of sense.
You cannot just hand a population an objective chart showing viral loads and expect a massive, complex society to magically reorganize itself without conflict.
No, of course not.
You have to bring in the diverse perspectives of teachers, business owners, parents, and healthcare workers to build a consensual narrative on how to actually survive.
Because if you try to force a first phase solution onto a third phase problem, you get massive resistance.
Yes, you get social fracturing. People reject the solution because they were excluded from the design of their own lives.
Okay, that makes perfect sense conceptually. First phase science diagnoses the virus. Third phase science figures out how humanity actually navigates it together. But how do we practice this third phase science in reality, Getting a diverse group of angry, stressed stakeholders into a room to build consensus around a massive crisis just sounds like a description of a terrible town hall meeting where everyone screams into a microphone and nothing changes.
Right, and town hall meetings are performative. They're fundamentally incapable of handling complexity.
Mm.
To do third phase science, you need a rigorously structured environment.
And this is the structured democratic dialogue, right?
Yes, structured democratic dialogue, or SDD. Originating with systems thinkers like Hassan Azbekan over 50 years ago, it is designed specifically to navigate high-stakes situational complexity without devolving into chaos.
And this methodology happens inside something called a Demosophia situation room. The very first one was built at the University of Virginia back in 1982.
That's right.
But what really anchors this for me is how universally applicable the structure is. It works across radically different human experiences.
It really does. Consider a breakthrough in 1987. LaDonna Harris, a prominent Comanche leader, was trying to tackle deeply entrenched issues of tribal governance and emancipation.
Right.
She was navigating centuries of historical trauma, overlapping authority, and deep cultural complexities. And every other consensus-building method had failed.
Because open floors inevitably allow the most charismatic or senior individuals to just dominate the conversation, right?
Exactly. So she utilized the structured dialogue method with 15 different tribal chiefs.
Wow. How did it overcome that hierarchy?
By neutralizing the power dynamics through its strict architecture. You don't just sit in a circle and debate. The structure forces everyone to separate their personal authority from their ideas, allowing the group to map out solutions based on logic rather than legacy.
And it created a massive breakthrough for their governance strategies.
It did.
Now contrast that indigenous governance challenge with a corporate crisis. In 1993, the CEO of a pharmaceutical company faced a major sunk cost fallacy.
Oh, this is a great example.
Yeah, he knew a specific drug they were developing wasn't going to be cost effective or viable. But his interdisciplinary team of highly educated scientists was deeply invested in it.
Right. Their egos were tied up in it.
He couldn't just order them to stop without destroying morale. He needed them to see the reality of the failure themselves.
So he brought them into this structured dialogue process, and by forcing the scientists to visually map the dependencies of the drug's development and market viability, they arrived at the conclusion themselves.
That's incredible.
It was so effective at cutting through departmental silos and ego that the FDA actually adopted the process for their Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, eventually winning a Harvard Innovation Award.
So we have indigenous tribal chiefs navigating historical governance on one hand, and FDA scientists evaluating pharmaceutical viability on the other.
Yeah.
It proves that the ultimate barrier to human agreement isn't the subject matter. It is the architecture of the conversation.
Which brings us to the mechanics. What is actually happening inside that room?
Right, because a standard public hearing often involves officials talking for like 80% of the time, while citizens get 3 minutes at a microphone.
Yeah. A structured dialogue collaboratory, by contrast, takes a focused, intense 8 hours.
8 hours sounds exhausting, to be honest.
Yeah.
But given the stakes, it's a blink of an eye. Take us inside that room. How do they go from total disagreement to a Harvard award-winning consensus?
It is a very rigid progression. It
yeah.
begins with silent idea generation.
Silent.
Yes, preventing the loudest voice from anchoring the room. Everyone generates ideas quietly. Then comes clarification, ensuring everyone actually understands what the ideas mean without debating their merit yet.
Oh, that's smart. Just making sure we're speaking the same language.
Exactly. Then they cluster those ideas by affinity. But the true magic happens in the final phase, which is influence mapping.
This is where the methodology completely changed my perspective on problem solving. It introduces a phenomenon called the erroneous priority effect.
Yes, the erroneous priority effect, or EPE. It is the trap of traditional democracy.
Oh.
When a group generates a list of problems and you ask them to vote on the most important one, they will almost universally choose the most visible, painful symptom. They vote on the popular understanding of the crisis.
Right.
But influence mapping doesn't ask what is most important. It asks a relational question. If we successfully address idea A, does it significantly make it easier to address idea B?
It's the difference between a painkiller and a cast.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, like if I have a broken arm and you take a democratic vote in my body on what the priority is, every nerve entity is going to vote for painkillers.
Right, because the pain is the most visible, acute symptom.
Exactly. Taking the painkiller is the popular priority. But setting the bone doesn't immediately relieve the pain. In fact, it probably hurts more at first. Yet setting the bone is the leverage priority that actually fixes the structural system.
That is an exceptional way to visualize it.
The erroneous priority effect proves that if you just take a simple vote, society will always vote for the painkiller.
Absolutely. The structured dialogue process maps how ideas influence each other, building a web of causality. And time again, the data shows that the ideas people initially voted for as the most popular rarely have any actual leverage to change the system.
There is a profound real-world example of this involving the global climate crisis, isn't there?
Yes. In a 2022 pilot group, stakeholders used this exact methodology to map the climate crisis, utilizing those original continuous critical problems we mentioned earlier.
The CCPs.
Right. And when they spent the hours mapping the influence, asking, if we solve this, does it fix that? The deepest systemic driver at the very bottom of the map, the root cause holding up everything else. It wasn't pollution.
Real?
No. It wasn't agricultural practices or the depletion of the ozone layer.
So the broken bone of the climate crisis wasn't even environmental.
No, it was CCP 41, inadequate participation of the people at large in all public decisions.
What?
The root cause of the environmental collapse, according to this intersubjective mapping, is a structural crisis of democracy and inclusion.
Because if the people are excluded from the design of their economy and their society, you will endlessly generate environmental destruction.
Exactly.
We keep throwing legislative painkillers at the pollution without addressing the structural exclusion of the people.
And this methodology provides incredible results. At the start of those 8 hours, divergence among the group is almost absolute. But by the end of the influence mapping, they consistently achieve roughly 80% consensus, which they call the Demosensus Index.
80% is huge.
It is. More impressively, by identifying that deep root cause, they reduce the complexity score of the entire situation by 95%. They shrink a seemingly impossible problem into a targeted, actionable leverage point.
But here's the next hurdle. Let's say a group spends 8 hours, they avoid the erroneous priority effect, and they find the deep root cause. They build this brilliant map.
Okay.
The world doesn't stand still. We live in a reality of constant accelerating change, what is often called a VUCA world. Volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity.
Which requires the principle of ephemeralization. The solutions must be as flexible as the problems are volatile.
Right.
The book uses the metaphor of Heraclitus's river. You can never step in the same VUCA river twice. Think about global supply chains. If a brilliant team of experts spent weeks in 2019 mapping the perfect, highly efficient global supply chain for medical equipment, that map was a masterpiece.
And by March of 2020, that map was completely useless.
Exactly. The geopolitical and biological realities shifted so violently that the previous consensus was instantly invalidated.
Or, like, if that 2022 group mapped the climate crisis again just a year later, after the war in Ukraine fundamentally altered global energy markets and food supplies, the influence map would have to change.
It would.
So how do you keep up if every map takes 8 hours of grueling human dialogue to build?
You augment the human wisdom with technology. The methodology now utilizes a cloud-based platform called Logosophia to run these sessions. It features an AI algorithm called ISM, designed specifically to track the complex matrix of votes and connections.
But crucially, the AI doesn't generate the ideas. Right. And it doesn't make the decisions.
Right. It just handles the exhausting math of influence mapping. If you have 50 ideas, that represents thousands of potential connections.
Which would take forever for a human to draw out.
Exactly. The algorithm intelligently sequences the questions it asks the group. Does A affect B, and builds the visual map in real time? It reduces the time needed to map those deep structural connections from a grueling 15 hours of manual whiteboard drawing down to just 3 hours.
Okay, so we have a philosophical framework in Demosophia. We have 50 years of data proving it works across indigenous tribes and federal agencies. We have the software to make it fast enough to survive a volatile world.
They have all the pieces.
It seems like every government, every Fortune 500 company, and every city council should be operating inside a situation room like this. Yet they aren't.
Because there is one final barrier, which the text calls the deliberative democracy labyrinth, this system only works if leaders are actually willing to commit to the results.
Right.
Consider a cautionary tale from the city of Heraklion in Crete.
A story that perfectly captures the frustrating reality of political ego.
It really does. A mayoral candidate built his campaign on a platform of authentic deliberative democracy. He promised to move away from top-down mandates and give the citizens a genuine, structured voice in how the city was run.
Sounds great on paper.
Taking him at his word, the authors and their team spent 4 years designing and building a dedicated civic situation room for the city, a permanent infrastructure for this kind of dialogue called a Demoscopio Center.
4 years.
4 years. The candidate won the election, and once he was securely in power, he abandoned the project entirely. The facility was just ignored.
If this system is essentially a telescope that completely changes how we see the universe of human problems, giving us a clear map out of the mess, why do leaders intentionally blind themselves?
Because practicing true intersubjective science requires leaders to give up a degree of absolute control. When you commit to extracting the wisdom of the people, you have to actually trust that wisdom.
You can no longer wield unilateral power.
Exactly. A politician or a CEO can't just mandate the popular painkiller to win a quick round of applause. They have to sit back and let the stakeholders examine the broken bone, which might require difficult systemic changes that the leader didn't come up with.
And for individuals accustomed to the traditional paradigm of wielding power, that loss of centralized control is terrifying.
It is. Many would rather maintain the illusion of being the hero with the sword, even if it means they are just hacking blindly in the dark, than become a facilitator of collective wisdom.
Let's synthesize this journey for you, the learner listening right now. We are facing overlapping massive knots from global climate change to the specific tangled messes in your own industry, your community.
They're everywhere.
Traditional objective phase one science and isolated experts working in silos cannot solve these alone. We need third phase intersubjective science. We need the structured wisdom of the group.
Tools like structured democratic dialogue prove that if you put people in the right environment with an architecture that neutralizes power dynamics, you can reduce the complexity of a situation by 95%.
95%? That's just wild.
You can bypass the erroneous priority effect, finding the true leverage points that actually heal the system, rather than just treating the most visible symptom. Inclusion is not just a moral nicety. It is a scientific necessity for solving complex problems.
And whether you are leading a massive corporate division, organizing a local community initiative, or even just trying to align a deeply divided family decision, true consensus requires a structure that maps influence. Not just a quick vote on what's popular.
Exactly.
We want to leave you with a final thought to mull over as you step back into your day. We spend so much of our time curating our digital feeds, arguing in comment sections, essentially trapping ourselves in phase two subjectivity, where everyone is just shouting their own reality at each other. What if the biggest barrier to solving your own most stubborn professional or personal problem isn't a lack of information or a lack of experts? What if it is simply the lack of a structured, intersubjective dialogue with the people involved?
Right.
What would happen if you stopped looking for the popular symptom in your life and started mapping the true leverage points?
It requires dropping the sword and trusting the thread.
Drop the sword and pick up the thread.
Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us today. Keep questioning, keep connecting the dots, and we will catch you next time as we continue to explore the ideas that shape our world.